Welcome to the U.S. National Privacy Legislation Podcast. This is Joy Mason Intriago, Managing Director of the Association for Data and Cyber Governance. You can find us online at adcg.org. We are very excited to offer this timely event, which is just one part of our ongoing effort to inform the data and cyber governance community on timely topics. ADCG is a community of data and cyber governance professionals who are charged with the governance aspects of data privacy, data protection, and cybersecurity. Check us out and join this growing and multifaceted group. Let's get started. Thank you for joining this first in a series of podcasts, U.S. National Privacy Legislation, Is It Possible? This is Joy Mason Intriago, Managing Director of the Association for Data and Cyber Governance. ADCG is pleased to be the organizer of this event as a part of our ongoing effort to inform the data and cyber governance community on timely topics. Please learn more about how you can get involved in ADCG at adcg.org. Our moderators are Jeremiah Buckley, otherwise known as Jerry, and Jody Westby. They are both highly qualified and engaged on this topic, so the conversations will no doubt be lively and timely. Jerry Buckley is a founding partner of Buckley LLP, which is a recognized leader in the field of financial services law. He has been described by Chambers as a dean of consumer financial services bar. An important focus of Jerry's practice is on data protection and privacy regulation and enforcement at the state and federal level. He acts as counsel to the Financial Services Trade Association's Data Protection Working Group, an informal alliance of the National Financial Trade Associations, responding to the fast-changing legislative and regulatory developments related to privacy and data security. Jody Westby is CEO of Global Cyber Risk LLC, which provides first-tier advisory and technical services to organizations needing cyber risk assessments, incident response planning, cyber governance, digital inventories, and data mapping. She is also an adjunct professor at Georgia Institute of Technology's School of Computer Science. She serves in several important roles with the American Bar Association, including chair of the Privacy and Computer Crime Committee, as a co-chair of the ABA Cyber Crime Committee, and an appointed member of the ABA President's Cybersecurity Task Force. She is a contributor to Forbes and authors a regular column on cybersecurity issues for Leader's Edge magazine. Welcome, Jerry and Jody. Let's get started.
As Joy indicated, the focus of this series of podcasts is whether the United States, the largest economy in the world, will establish national privacy and data security standards. There is no question that privacy standards will be established. The issue is whether there will be uniform standards across the United States or whether privacy and data security in America will be governed by a series of state enactments as well as the European Union's General Data Protection Regulation, impacting transactions that originate in the United States that involve EU citizens. Jody and I are partnering to present this series of podcasts titled U.S. National Privacy Policy, Is It Possible? Because we believe that this issue will continue to rise in importance over the years ahead and is bound to be one of the more urgent issues confronting the next Congress and the new administration, no matter what the election results. Both Jody and I will admit to a disposition in favor of uniform national privacy data protection standards, but we realize that there are varying opinions on this issue and fair consideration must be given to all points of view. National standards will only be arrived at, if they are at all, by a general consensus. We intend to present podcasts interviewing guests with different points of view. Our guests will include privacy advocates, legislators and regulators, corporate leaders, and academic and legal experts. We are grateful to the Association for Data and Cyber Governance for providing a forum for these discussions. It is ADCG's mission not to be an advocate, but to provide a place where members in the public can come to learn, engage in discussions, and receive training necessary to exist in a rapidly changing legal and regulatory environment where data rights and data governance requirements are being shaped. And so I now turn it over to Jody to introduce today's distinguished guests, Jim Dempsey.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Jim, for joining us today. It's my pleasure to introduce a giant in the field of privacy and civil liberties and cybersecurity, James X. Dempsey, which I call Jim and most people call Jim. He's been around Washington a long time. Jim is currently the executive director, however, of the Berkeley Center for Law and Technology at the UC Berkeley School of Law, where he teaches a course on cybersecurity to the LLM program. From 2012 to 2017, Jim also served as a part-time member of the U.S. Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board, an independent agency within the federal government charged with advising senior policymakers and overseeing the nation's counterterrorism programs. From 1997 to 2014 is where Jim really built the foundations of his reputation. He was at the Center for Democracy and Technology, or CDT, as it's called for short. It's an organization focused on privacy and other internet issues. And Jim served in various leadership positions with CDT, including as executive director and then as head of CDT West on the West Coast from 2005 to 2014. Jim's been an assistant counsel to the House Judiciary Committee, Subcommittee on Civil and Constitutional Rights, and associate at Arnold and Porter, and a law clerk to Honorable Robert Brocker. Jim's publications include about cybersecurity information sharing governance structures, bulk collection, systemic government access to private sector data, and the path to ECPA reform, which is the Electronic and Communications Privacy Act. So he has a wealth of experience that is especially relevant now in privacy, especially with what we're going to flow into in our first topic, the European Union Court of Justice invalidating the U.S. Privacy Shield. But let me ask you, Jim, with the passage of the CCPA, the California Consumer Protection Act, and then, of course, preceding that, the EU's General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, as we can call it, and then now, just this past week, last Friday, the European Court of Justice invalidating the U.S. Privacy Shield program, I'm hearing more and more calls for federal privacy law. Do we need a federal privacy law? What are your views on that?
Jody and Jerry, it's really great to join you on this podcast. You know, does the United States need a federal privacy law? I think the answer to that is uniformly yes. The trouble is, saying that we need a federal privacy law is essentially worthless in getting us any progress to that goal. The fact is, every major consumer group supports federal privacy law. Every major internet company supports privacy law. And the Chamber of Commerce says we need a comprehensive federal privacy law. The problem is, and the reason why we don't have a comprehensive federal privacy law is because the privacy groups want one in order to strengthen consumer rights. The Chamber of Commerce wants a comprehensive federal privacy law in order to weaken consumer rights. So everybody agrees on the rhetoric of, oh, of course, we need comprehensive law, support innovation, avoid inconsistent requirements on companies, but we happen to have a fundamental split on how to get there and what that really means.
Let's drill down just a little bit and talk about the specific issues, preemption, enforcement, private right of action, the stumbling blocks that seem to divide the advocacy community from the business community, and any solutions you see to those differences.
Well, you know, you're right, Jerry, in identifying those two stumbling blocks, private right of action or enforcement generally on the one hand and preemption on the other. I think potentially a third stumbling block is the question of cybersecurity and whether that's in a privacy bill or not in a privacy bill. Before we get to that, though, let's, of course, recognize how much there is agreement on in terms of the current concept of what is consumer privacy and what would be covered by any kind of a comprehensive privacy law. There's a wide agreement, I think universal agreement in a way, on notice and transparency, opt-out. As far as I can tell, nobody is really calling anymore for opt-in. The standard now that everybody is aiming for is some kind of opt-out. Opt-out of what is a good question, but opt-out. And then rights of access, correction, data deletion, sort of a version of the right to be forgotten, although that's not really what it is, and data portability. So those are the basic concepts that are pretty widely agreed upon. And in a way, one of the reasons why they agree upon them and one of the reasons why industry agrees on them is those are already the requirements of the existing privacy framework that almost every U.S. company operates under. Those requirements, notice, transparency about collection practices, opt-out of sharing, access, correction, deletion, and portability, those are already uniformly, in essence, the law in the United States, as Jody indicated, as a result of the GDPR, which up until a year ago was the most important privacy law for American companies. American companies, prior to the May 2018 effective date of the GDPR, American-based, U.S.-based companies spent huge amounts of resources becoming GDPR compliant. And then this year, or starting, of course, last year, the second most, now the most important privacy law is the California Consumer Privacy Protection Act, CCPA, which also embodies all of those and which covers only California citizens, but any company with a national footprint has had to comply with the CCPA. So those are already the law, and most companies provide them. Now, what's interesting is, do we really think our privacy is well protected, even with those protections already in place? And the answer is, I think most people would say, certainly I would say, we haven't really gotten to the core of the information economy. So we can talk about that in a second. But once you agree upon those requirements, then of course there's huge argument over what are the carve-outs and what are the exceptions and what are the details. And that's where you get to these questions. Enforcement, particularly, is there a private right of action? Under current federal law, there's FTC Act has no private right of action. A number of the state laws, including the California law, does have a private right of action. And then will the federal law preempt any more stringent state laws, and will it deprive state attorneys general of insisting upon more stringent standards? And of course, the business community uniformly supports preemption, uniformly opposes private right of action, and the consumer groups uniformly support private, just the opposite, support private right of action and oppose preemption. Now, you know, is there a middle ground? I think yes. I think there's, this is just partly my approach to policy making and my view of issues, which Jody knows well. I always think that there's a middle ground. Cam Carey and John Morris, both veterans of the Obama administration, now at Brookings, put out about a month ago a very, very good paper in depth on these issues. And specifically said, you know, on enforcement, there's multiple tiers. You can set up limits. You can have different criteria for different kinds of remedies. And on preemption as well, you can preempt on anything that's directly contradictory to whatever federal standard you set, but then still allow the states to fill in gaps and address emerging issues. So I think there are middle grounds, a range of options on both of those stumbling blocks, but so far, and it's partly the nature of the Washington, D.C. process, a lot of people are treating them as either or.
So with the European Court of Justice invalidating the privacy shield, does that kick out the FTC as enforcer here in the U.S.? So basically, our companies are now subject to EU regulatory enforcement, aren't they?
Of course, they are and always have been subject to FTC enforcement. The problem with the Schrems decision and the privacy shield is that it went to an issue, both Schrems 1 and Schrems 2, went to an issue over which neither the companies nor the FTC have any authority. And that's the question of U.S. government, law enforcement, and particularly intelligence agency access to data on Europeans collected by U.S. companies. That's always been the stumbling block. Now, it's my view that the U.S. has a system on the law enforcement and national security side, which is actually as good as and arguably better than the European system. The irony is that if the rulings of the CJEU, the Court of Justice of the European Union, applied within Europe, then Germany would not be able to send data to France, and pre-Brexit, they wouldn't have been able to send it to England, and Germany couldn't send to Italy, because the fact is the Italian standards for intelligence agency access and arguably the French standard or the Slovakian standard for data for intelligence agency access are worse than the U.S. standard and would not meet standards for cross-border flows. The CJEU, you can't block that. It doesn't have jurisdiction to block that because it has no jurisdiction over national security matters. But there's always been this sort of, in my opinion, unstated premise here on intelligence agency access and this notion that somehow the United States has weak laws on that. Our laws need improvement, but they're probably stronger than the European standards. The big issue that possibly could be corrected, I'm not sure Congress is going to correct it, raised by Schrems too, is whether EU citizens have the right to sue in United States courts or how they can obtain redress in the United States courts. On this one, I think probably, again, the EU underestimates how little redress rights U.S. citizens have. We have strong standards, but the state secrets doctrine makes it very hard to enforce them in private litigation in the United States, unless you're actually subject to a criminal prosecution using intelligence data. So that's a little bit in the weeds, but I think, yeah, Schrems II has thrown another monkey wrench into the question of transatlantic data flows, but U.S. companies collecting data on European citizens remain subject to the data protection authorities of Europe, and U.S. companies collecting data, whether on European citizens or on Americans, remain subject to the jurisdiction of the Federal Trade Commission. So I don't think there's been a divestiture. It's just that the Federal Trade Commission cannot address that which Schrems has long complained about, which is intelligence agency access. That's never going to be in the purview, currently in the purview, and never will be in the purview of the FTC.
But the companies that signed up for Privacy Shield, if they were a member of Privacy Shield, then they were within FTC enforcement, right?
Correct.
And so now if Privacy Shield is done away with and invalid, they don't have that protection anymore. I mean, that's what the EU was mad about for a long time. They said the FTC doesn't do anything to enforce what they're supposed to under the General Data Protection Regulation or the directive. And so I just think that it's putting 5,000 companies that signed up for Privacy Shield, it's putting them out there and saying, you're now subject to EU. The FTC's right to enforce is...
The U.S. companies have always been subject to the jurisdiction of the European data protection authorities for anything having to do with data collected in Europe. The problem is that the companies cannot do on their own what Europe wants, which is the creation of a meaningful right of action for European citizens to challenge intelligence collection authorities of the U.S. government. So that's the disconnect that I'm trying to get to here, the disconnect between the regulatory authority of the DPAs, the promises made in the Privacy Shield, the authority of the FTC. None of that can change the behavior of the U.S. intelligence agencies. And none of that can create what the U.S. intelligence agencies really don't give even to U.S. citizens, which is a meaningful right to challenge national security surveillance in the absence of a criminal prosecution using the intelligence data.
Do you think that if we had a national standard and if we had a central place other than the FTC in the executive branch where cyber security and data protection privacy was lodged, we would be in a better position to have a discussion with the European Union. At this point, we have a fragmented set of rules administered by an independent agency at the federal level and by states and state AGs and so forth. So it seems to me that part of having a discussion with Europe as an equal is having national standards. It also strikes me that you can add to your list of the issues that have to be resolved whether there is a way to solve the national security problem for U.S. citizens or those operating in the United States.
Yeah, Jerry, I think you're right on that. I would disagree with you on one point, which is I would not establish a separate agency in the United States. I would continue to lodge most of the privacy enforcement responsibility with the FTC. They have become the de facto U.S. National privacy regulator, along with the state attorney generals at the state level. The International Association of DPAs, of data protection authorities, basically recognize the FTC as their partner. The FTC participates in all international dialogues on privacy. They've built up a track record over the years. And by the way, and this gets to an issue that I don't want to lose sight of here, which is, does our debate about privacy really address what we're concerned about with the information economy? And as you hope can infer from my posing of the question, I don't think it does. I think the attention economy, what Shoshana Zuboff has called surveillance capitalism, is not addressed by privacy legislation as we've defined it. But for now, the FTC is our privacy regulator. And FTC is also pursuing some of the antitrust or sort of monopoly of data questions. And I think there's actually a logic to having the antitrust enforcement now in the era of big data in the same body as the consumer protection, data protection, privacy enforcement, because I think some of the answers to our unease, our deep-seated unease about how much data is being collected, where it's going, what it's being used for, those questions may not actually be addressed by traditional privacy, notice, opt-out, opt-in, et cetera, but instead need to be addressed by what Europe would call competition law, which in the United States we call antitrust law.
Well, let's go to that very interesting topic you sort of dangled out there earlier, which was mentioned cybersecurity and federal privacy law. So should a federal privacy law include cybersecurity? And what do you mean by that?
So in one regard, those who understand privacy in terms of the FIPS and understand what FIPS means, fair information practices, a concept actually which was invented not in Europe, but in the United States, fair information practices include the security principle. That if you collect personal information, information about individuals, you must give the notice, you must give access, you must have an accuracy requirement, a correction capability, et cetera, and you must protect it with reasonable security. Now, the FTC has, in essence, already established that under its longstanding Section 5 unfair or deceptive trade practices authority. And basically, the FTC has established as a matter of federal law that if you collect information about individuals and fail to protect it with reasonable security measures, that that is an unfair trade practice. Even if you didn't promise to protect it, which would have been deception, even if you made no promises, it is unfair under FTC Section 5, unfair to collect that data and fail to protect it with reasonable measures. Now, 16 states, including California, about 16, have also adopted their own state laws saying that any person who collects information on a resident of X state shall protect it with reasonable security measures appropriate to the size of the company and the nature of its business and the type of information that it collects. And then additional states have layered a lot of stuff on top of that, including New York and a number of other states. And then we have this incredible crazy quilt of state sectoral data security laws. But we already, in a way, do have this reasonable security requirement. The problem is the FTC has no effective or no meaningful rulemaking authority. So what is reasonable? How much security is enough security that the FTC has no authority to regulate on? It can issue guidelines, and then people can deduce from its case-by-case decision-making what the FTC thinks is reasonable and what it thinks is unreasonable. Putting this in federal legislation would, I think, be paired with some kind of a more explicit authority on the part of the FTC to actually regulate in this area. Right now, we're caught between the Wyndham case, which said, yes, the FTC does have authority over cybersecurity under its unfairness prong, and the LabMD case, which didn't challenge that proposition, but said that reasonableness is unreasonable, it's too vague, and that imposing reasonable security measures on companies is unenforceable. The FTC has responded to that by dropping the word reasonable from its orders and making them more detailed and more onerous. And for now, that's sort of where we're stuck. So there's still a little bit of a cloud hanging over the FTC's authority, and legislation would clarify that and codify something.
Jim, there is so much to discuss, and you are such a wealth of information. It really, this could go on
yes,
for a long time.
I'm afraid so.
And I hope we'll have a chance to take it offline, because there's so many things I know we'd all like to talk about. But let me ask if you might think about summing up here with two thoughts. One, what is the forum in which you think it is most likely that there could be a reconciliation interests? And second, what do you think the prospects are for passage, and what kind of national standard or adoption of a national standard, whether it's through the Uniform Law Commission, which I doubt will happen, or through congressional action?
Jerry, I have to say, I think I'm pessimistic just because of the nature of our Congress and the way that Congress approaches any issue now in such a hyper-partisan, black or white perspective. And it's so, so easy to gridlock things. I guess if you had a, you know, unified government in the form of a president and both houses of Congress under the same party, then you would get action. If it were Republican control of both branches of government, you would get the Republican bill, something like the Wicker bill or the Moran bill, or pulling versions from the draft chamber bill. And obviously, if you had a Democratic control of both branches, you might get action. Even then, it can be hard. The tools of the delayers are, in a way, more powerful than the tools of those who want to move something forward. Until then, I think we're muddling through. And my closing thought is what we're fighting over, does it matter anymore? Given the attention economy, you know, Facebook is 100% opt-in, prior explicit opt-in consent, okay? They don't do a single thing with your data, they claim, without your prior express permission, which to me is the flaw of the opt-in or opt-out. That whole debate gets you nowhere, because we all click accept, we all click yes. So I really would wish and hope that somebody would start shifting the debate to the nature of the free economy, nature of free services, and this whole attention economy where the whole purpose is to capture your attention so you keep knowingly, sort of, voluntarily turning over more and more and more and more information.
Jim, on that note, I think, Jody, would you like to sum up? I have found this discussion fascinating, and it leaves us with the need for another podcast with you to explore the issues raised just at the end here. The competitive issues amongst companies, the antitrust issues as you've raised, and the right of myself to control my digital persona that is created by others, and the ongoing right, even if I've opted in, to control my digital persona is going to be the issue going forward. And I think you put your finger on something that has to be a part of the national debate. So thank you. And Jody, would you like to sum up?
I'd just like to say how smart Joy is at ADCG for deciding we needed to have these conversations, because Jim certainly has started us off with a whole list of issues that certainly have piqued my interest, and there's lots more to discuss. And we will have more podcasts being posted, so everyone should stay tuned. And a special thank you to Jim for being one of our inaugural speakers.
Thanks for joining us this week on U.S. national privacy legislation. Make sure to visit our website, adcg.org, where you can subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, Pocket Cast, or via RSS, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in what you heard today, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the podcast, that would help us out too. Also, you might want to subscribe to our weekly newsletter, Data and Cyber Governance Alert, which you can do right on our homepage. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode, where we dig deeper into the possibilities of U.S. national privacy legislation.